down to the end of the sheet. You can put down your name and email address. I'd appreciate that.
Prostaglandins for protecting the skin.
stomach. They also invented NutraSweet, which made them a target for Monsanto to take over. And so Monsanto took over at that time and spun NutraSweet off as a separate company. Pharmacia was a merger between Cyril and Upjohn to make Pharmacia, and of course everybody knows Pfizer. When I worked in Ann Arbor, my boss's boss was the man who invented Lipitor. I have experience putting six compounds into drug development that I've invented, and a couple of them are still ongoing right now. None are currently on the market. As I said, I moved back to the Chicago area. I now work at Decode Chemistry in Woodridge, Illinois, which is just down the road and off of 88. You go just south on 355 a little bit. And now I am teaching this class here at NIU. I'm very excited to be doing so. And that just shows the different logos of the places where I have received education, taken classes, or taught. And then the different company logos on the bottom. So any questions on that? It's just an introduction. And this is a small class. And I just was wondering if we could go around the room, if you could just tell me who you are and what your interest is or experience with organic chemistry.
Start. Okay, my name is Ilan. I'm first year, second year. I work for Dr. Plum, so organic is my background, and I would like to get a PhD in organic. So.
This is my second year. So grad student here at Harvard on the reproductive data club. So organic chemistry is my concentration.
Okay. When you say second year, does that mean you took a course similar to this one already? Or
A little different.
Okay.
We had physical organic.
Yeah.
That's probably the closest.
Okay, good.
My name's Matt O'Connor and I'm a master's student here. And I work with same research group as your own. We do the super electric flux.
I'm Robert Gwynn. I'm a first-year graduate student trying to get my PhD. I would like to get into an organic lab.
My name is Matt. I'm a first-year graduate student as well. And just like Rob, I'm trying to get into an organic research group.
My name is Nate. I'm actually undergrad physics right now. And I took Orgo. I really enjoyed it.
My name is Kristen. I'm a senior undergrad in chemistry, and they say I'm interested in going into the pharmaceutical industry eventually.
I'm Andrew Prokoska. I'm a senior chem undergrad as well, and organic is probably my favorite chem class I've taken, so continue that.
My name is Sona. I'm a second year grad student. I'm working for the synthetic organic division, but I'm still to choose the class.
I'm Anita. I'm a third-year graduate student. I have an undergrad in pharmacy. I'm interested in synthesis. I work with Dr. Plum, same as Sarah.
My name is Xinjie Wu. I come from China. And this is my first year of PhD. And my interest maybe is the organic mechanics.
And my name is this is my first year pursuing my PhD in professor of Monday type. So I used to start cell biology before, so I think you have a big background on organic chemistry. So I think I want to learn a lot of it, and I think it's good for my project.
Good. My name is Marshall. I'm a second year grad student here. I love Dr. Tan Colin, I think.
My name is Eddie. I'm a undergrad and I work with Dr. Catcon. Did everybody get this?
Please sign the sign-in sheet. That way I can keep track of attendance until I get to remember everybody. And also put your email on there. That would be good. post the syllabus on the web. Did people, have you been able to see that so far?
Is the Blackboard not thrown in?
Pardon me?
To the Blackboard website?
No, it's on the departmental.
Departmental, okay.
I'm not quite proficient at Blackboard yet, but is that how you guys communicate mostly?
Sometimes.
I didn't quite write down handouts. I'm going to pass out paper handouts at the beginning until I get connected to the Blackboard system. So, again, we've gone over my name. The course is chemistry. I don't quite understand why. Is it 431/631? Is one the graduate, one the undergraduate?
Okay.
Because Dr. Klump had it as 531 in the previous syllabus that he sent.
That's the old designation.
Pardon me?
It's the old designation. They've changed it.
Okay. And also I'd like to thank everybody for, I know this is cutting into probably your dinner time or relaxation time. They adjusted the schedule so that it's from 6 to 7, so I appreciate the fact that everybody was flexible to accommodate that schedule. I have an office in Faraday Hall 338. I believe Matt Sheets is in there right now.
Yeah.
So I haven't really spent a lot of time in there. This is the phone number for the office down there. And the 630 telephone number, that's my office number at work at ECODE. So you can call that at any time. If you have any questions, you can do that. I also have a campus email. You can email me as well if you have any questions. So the course, we're going to go over organic synthesis, different transformations, their importance to synthetic organic chemistry, and we'll also look at multi-step synthesis. I'd like to give you an exposure to multi-step synthesis, how do you design synthesis of complex molecules, and we'll go over that at the end of the class, towards the end of the class. Now, the textbook that we're using is Karen Sundberg, Part B, the most recent edition, which is, I believe, the fifth edition. Does everybody have a copy of this text?
They have the wrong one at the bookshelf. Yeah. This is what they had. There.
Look at that.
There were three books listed, but that was the only one that they actually had.
Okay.
Well, I have that. I have the other one.
Can you return
this?
Yeah, I think that. Well, I apologize for that. And as I said, I'll be giving out handouts at the beginning. You can write your notes on there if you would like. Oh. December 6th, which is the last week of regular class. Now, I'm going to have optional review sessions. I've done this in the past. And basically, I can either go over homework assignments, I can give up practice, exams. I'm here to answer your questions. And so, before the exam, maybe the Friday before or Thursday before, I'd be happy to have a study session with anybody who would like to attend. The fact that it's dinner time, I'll provide a pizza and beverages, soft drinks, and because I have to eat as well. So don't worry about it. We'll get everybody covered. That's usually gone over pretty well in the past. Homework, I'm going to give out homework assignments. I'll give you the first homework assignment today. Basically, it's very similar to, or may even include some of the problems that are in Carrion Sunburn. Okay? Let me pass around the copy. It's gotten a lot thicker over the years. When I first had this book, it was maybe at best half as thick as it is now. But at the end of each chapter is questions, and at the back are references for the answers to the questions. So doesn't tell you the answer, it gives you a paper, and you have to go read the paper to see what the answer is. But the homework assignments and the exam questions will be very similar to the problems in the back of the book. There will also be a literature project. I know that Professor Klump has done this in the past. When I was at Northwestern, I did an assignment as well, but it was more on name reactions. Name reactions were at one point on the ropes, but I think they're making quite a comeback, and it's a good way to learn organic chemistry. But in this course, we're going to go over multi-step synthesis. Basically, find a good total synthesis paper from the literature, or paper or papers, depending how detailed they are, and I'll give out a rubric in October. Basically, you go through to a retrosynthetic analysis of the target molecule, and then analyze the forward synthesis. And this will be at the end of the class, and we should have gone over most everything that's in that large book, and you should have a fairly good understanding for organic chemistry. Your attendance, I will take attendance each class. I strongly encourage that you come to every class. And I'd like to encourage participation. So if you don't understand something, if there's some questions you have, feel free to ask me either in class, because other people might have the same questions, or you can ask, we can take a break in the middle because it's a long class. You can ask during the break, or you can ask after class. And I'll try and discuss any questions that you might have. And so this is the outline. Basically, we're just going to go through Carrion Sunburn. Start off with Chapter 1, which is enolates, and work our way through all the different functional group and different chemistries that are there. We'll also talk about organometallic chemistry, plating chemistry, tin chemistry, boron, silicon, etc. At the end, we're going to talk about some reactive intermediates. I know that's of great interest to Professor Klump. And oxidations is huge, actually. There's a lot of information about oxidations. We're going to wrap it up with multi-step synthesis. The nice thing about Carrion Sunburn is that all of this information is in one book. Okay, you've got all the different chapters that cover all the different organic chemistries. You have a chapter devoted to multi-step synthesis, it also has the problems worked in it. So I think it's a very, very nice textbook. At the end, we'll go over a literature project. We can adjust as needed. If the class is a little larger than expected, we might be able to allow more time for that, we can maybe, I can try and move up the content and the material so that we, everybody has at least 15 minutes that they can go over their sentences. So any questions about how the course is going to be structured? Now, one of the other things, first off, was everybody able to get a syllabus? Or are we short? So we're short 3 copies. Okay. Now, well, at the break, I'll go figure out how to make a copy. So there are, there's another thing I'd like to go over, and it's, some people in here are undergraduates, some people are, first-year grad students, some people are different majors, actually. And so I thought I'd spend a few minutes to go over, where do you find chemical information, especially from an organic chemist perspective? So there are different journals that are commonly used by organic chemists. They're listed on the left-hand column. Some of those are the ones that probably have the largest impact. The Angewandte der Chemie, that's a journal that's based out of Germany. It's now written in English, which is good. Is there a foreign language requirement anymore? Probably not. When I went to school, we had to take a foreign language, preferably German, because a lot of the literature was still being published in German. Same thing for the second journal. Chemistry Letters, it's an ACS journal. Then you got the European Journal of Organic Chemistry, which is a branch of the Chemisch Berichte. Helvetica Chemica Acta, again, is a European journal. Petrocycles, I believe, is out of Asia, Japan. Of course, you have JAX, JOC, Organic Letters, Organometallics. Tetrahedron Letters is based out of England. And SIMLET, which is a short communication article, journal. On the right-hand side, you have... did I pass these out yet? And on the right-hand side, you have review journals. You have standard ACS-type journals, Counts Chemical Research, that type of thing. Aldrich Chemica Acta. How many people are familiar with Aldrich Chemical? Okay, most everybody. They really do a fine job of education as well as selling you chemicals. They have a free journal that you can subscribe to called Aldrich Chemica Acta. I encourage everybody to get a subscription to that if you don't have one. You just go on to their website and you sign up for it. I think there's maybe 5 or 6 copies per year. Plus at the front page they usually have some artwork because Alfred Bader collected paintings and he's the man who found it, Aldrich. So then there are some other journals on the right-hand side as well. Now, there is a series of books that are out there. And Organic Synthesis is free to members of the Organic Division. And so that's usually a very, very good thing to have. How many people are members of the ACS Organic Division?
ACS member, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a separate subscription to get the Organic Division membership. And basically it covers the cost of the book. And they have some other social events. But I think it's also online as well. No, they switched to electronic version of the book. Organic Reactions is very useful. Fieser and Fieser, Louis Caesar and his wife were very active in reagents. There's a large series of books called Feaser and Feaser. They go over virtually every organic reagent that are in there. As a side note, Louis Feaser invented napalm. So he's an old time, actually I think he might have passed away. He was around during World War II, and he invented that. So Feaser and Feaser, comprehensive organic synthetic methods is good, synthetic methods, and reports of organic synthesis. And then there's a series of books called Name Reactions Okay. And the first one was heterocycle synthesis. Then the second one was functional group transformations, which we're going to cover. And then the next one is on homologation reactions, which actually ended up being two volumes. There's another one on ring formations, which we're writing right now. And then there's going to be another volume, which is going to be on heterocycles again. And so this is actually was written by Jack Lee, or edited by Jack Lee, and some of my colleagues. Jack used to work in Ann Arbor with me, and so I've actually helped co-author this series of books, as well as some other people. So I can pass it around so you can take a look. The nice thing about this is that it has a little bit of the history, background, what the scope and limitations are, what the mechanism is, and then it actually has some experimental procedures. This was written in collaboration with E.J. Corey, who is a Nobel laureate synthetic chemist from Harvard. He was one of our consultants at Pfizer in Ann Arbor, and so we had a good relationship with him, and he wanted to see a book like this written, and so a lot of us got together and wrote this book. Some other reference texts are the Merck Index. I think it's probably the 14th edition or something like that now, 13th edition. That has a lot of useful information about different organic chemicals in it, as well as this is also available online. You can probably Google organic name reactions and Merck Index and come up with the online version as well. It's nowhere near as detailed as the book that I'm passing around. Then there's the Aldrich Catalog, which not only sells you the chemicals that you like to use, but it also has a lot of interesting information in there and other things. Yes. And purification of laboratory chemicals is very useful. The book by Jack Lee, he also wrote basically Modern Organic Synthesis Laboratory, in the laboratory, which is basically organic techniques. If you're going to become a synthetic organic chemist, that's probably a good book to get, so that you get familiar with the different techniques that you're going to use. So name reactions, you can also find these on the web. There's this one website, which is in the reference there. So you go to the acetoacetic ester condensation reaction. And so here it is, tells a little bit about it. It's basically a one-page summary of the reaction. What is the reaction, what's the mechanism, and some references for it. So you can at least get familiar with it. I think in the back of the Merck Index, there's 451 organic name reactions. Now, I don't know all of them. Okay. Not only that, there's 451 reactions listed, but there's really about 900 because some of them go by more than one name, okay? Like the Ubi coupling, okay? It's also known as a four-component coupling reaction. So there's two names for each reaction. But it's just the way that synthetic organic chemists converse with each other. There's another series of books. Are you guys familiar with the Scripps? It's out in San Diego. It's another educational institution. Dale Holger is at Scripps, Casey Nicolau, and this is what they use at Scripps for organic synthesis. And so if you look, that blue book, they sell for $125. Somewhere look like a real bargain. And it's basically the same outline as Karen Sundberg, but it has some of Dale Holger's insights worked into it. And then, so when they have an organic class at Scripps, they use that book, and then they use the Classics in Total Synthesis, which Casey Nicolau has. So, just to familiarize yourself with that. And then also, there's another link. So, what do they do at Harvard for this class? This is what they use at Harvard. So, Andy Myers teaches this course at Harvard, and basically, uses asymmetric alkylation of amylenes. So, this is the lecture notes that he has, and it's actually a nice. Probably not one of the best ones. But the way this is organized, it has a lot of very compact, and it has a lot of references, key references at the beginning that you would like to see, review references, and then it goes into some of the key reactions. It talks about some of the notes. And this is it's public information, so we're not going to use this for this course, but I just want to let you know where you can find this information if you would like to. Now there's also one other thing out there. There's a electronic databases out there. Popular one is SciFinder, Bioshine, and Reaxys. How many people are aware of these or use these? SciFinder can, certainly in industry, it's kind of expensive. I don't know what access you have here.
There is a website.
Okay. It's a very nice tool to have. You can search reactions. You can look at products. You can do keyword searches. You can look by reagents. You can look up authors. So it's a really nice tool to have. And there's some other databases out there as well. And that other book I'm passing around, there was E.J. Corey had this idea that, well, you could just come up with you could systematically break down organic synthesis. You could draw a molecule, okay, any molecule, say somebody isolated Taxol for the first time. They could draw the structure of Taxol in after they figured out what it was. and they could just click a button and different synthetic routes would come out as output. And so he began this project, I think, in the 1960s. And so he basically came up with this book called The Logic of Organic Synthesis, and where he went through basically doing a systematic approach to a disconnection of molecules and then some working backwards, different functional group transformations, and then a forward route using different syntons and functional group isosteres. So it ended up in that book, and then it took off, and I think he got a Nobel Prize for his contribution to organic chemistry, one of which was that idea.
So one other thing,
somewhere throughout the semester, I talked to Professor Carnahan about this, and he said we could probably go ahead and do that. I'd like to arrange a field trip. So one of the things that probably students don't necessarily have, you spent most of your life, most of you probably spent your career in academia. You don't really know what it's like to work in the chemical industry. And so I will probably arrange for a field trip at some point during the semester where we can go on a trip to a pharmaceutical company and see what it's like to actually work in industry and talk to some of the scientists. So I haven't finalized this yet. I have to make some phone calls, but I will do that. The class is growing again. How many people are here? How many people are taking this for credit? Did everybody get to sign this? Okay, if not, then we're going to sign it. You can use the back if need be. Okay. Since there's 16 people and I only made 11 copies, now I do get time to take a break, stretch your legs, get a glass of water or something, and I'll see if I can get a hold of a copy on the machine and get some extra copies. Okay, great. So we'll take a, it's 6:35?
No.
What time is it?
Yeah, it's almost, a little bit after.
It's 7:00, so it's 5:15.
That clock never moves.
That's New York.
Yeah, it's about that.
Pardon me?
Yes.
Oh, wait, here we go. 6:34. So we'll come back at 6:45. They'll give us some time to make some copies and take a break for 10 minutes.
Also, those are the three that they added.
Yep.
I'm going to take mine back. Maybe. Because I have the double stack already. I'm the older edition of mine.
I've got a copy of that one. 5th edition in a box coming from Hawaii. It'll come here in 3 months.
You bought that on internet,
right?
I bought it a while ago, but it won't be here until like November.
Takes it that long?
It's a low priority because I'm shipping books only, and I didn't expect to need it since those were the assigned books.
Ooh.
Okay.
guess you don't have to worry about buying the other two. I doubt it. I wouldn't count on it. Unless they have it right now.
Which is good.
Yeah. I don't know where we'd even get one then, because I got mine off of Amazon. You know, and it takes a while.
What's like that? Do you know where the young lady went for making copies?
This one's sitting up right up there.
Oh, okay.
So the top is set.
Thank you. until 7:15, okay? We have 25 slides to go over. We're not going to get it there in the next 15 minutes. I'm probably being a little aggressive, but that's I allotted more time at the beginning to go over the organic chemistry. So we'll go over chapter one over this week and part of next week as well. So 55 pages in chapter one, not counting the problems. And so if you get a copy of the book, go ahead and start reading it. There's probably some older versions floating around, version 4 or edition 4 or maybe even 3. These are virtually the same, so you can read that as well to get familiar with it. I'll just start into it a little bit at the beginning. It's a little slow. So, you know, I'll go over the introduction. We'll talk about how do you make enolates. This is basically the highlight for the chapter. How do we make enolates? Talk about regioselectivity and stereoselectivity and enolate formation. How do you generate enolates? Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. If you need a copy, feel free. Here's the where to get information. Here's the syllabus. And then here are the notes for today. Each chapter, in Carrying Sunburn, at the very back of the chapter,
they have references, review references. If you look at your notes from Dale Boger, his scripts, at the very beginning he has review references, or general references. Harvard, Andy Myers has the same approach. I think these are all people who were schooled by E.J. Corey, and it was just his style of doing things. And so, basically, these are some general reviews. If you wanted to dig deeper into E-Link chemistry, here's a review on asymmetric alkylations, and this all gets from Interactive. And this is free. You can go online and get that. Some of these other are in this comprehensive organic synthesis collection. But these are basically some general references you can look at if you want to dig a little deeper. So I'll begin with the enolate alkylation. This structure on the left is a Z, is a alkyl group, or actually these are all enolates. Z is an alkyl group, and it's a ketone enolate. This is an ester enolate, and this would be an amide enolate. And so you have an acidic proton over in this position here. They can be removed, and you can generate the enolate. You then alkylate that with an alkylating agent, and you form this bond. You form this new bond here between the R prime, that carbon right there, and this is the enolate. And you can also do the same thing with aluminum ions. And so here you have a imine anion. You can do the same alkylation, which gives you this imine. This is the imine functionality right here, and this is the bond that you're forming. And so it's very similar to this. And imines are not necessarily the most stable chemicals out there, and this can be hydrolyzed normally with acid and water to get you your ketone. So that's the general enolate alkylation reaction. And I alluded to the retrosynthetic analysis, which is this bond forming reaction. Now, if you see a molecule that has this functionality, where you have a carbonyl, another carbon, and then another bond out here, at this connection that you can do, if you want to see, well, how can I make that molecule, you would say, well, this is a disconnection that I could do from an enolate alkylation reaction. And so you draw your wavy bond, and so this is would be signified disconnection of this bond, breaking this, to give you your enolate and the alkylating agent. And so this is called retrosynthetic analysis. And this is the disconnection between the alpha carbon on your enolate and the potential alkylating agent. Now, this is just a blurb I got out of Dale Boger's book. He's quite big into the Nobel Prize and who won it and all the significance is. But E.J. Corey won the 1990 Nobel Prize. Basically looking into synthetic methodology and its contributions to organic synthesis. This is the program that I talked about, this LHASA program. And he's made many, many natural products. And he's really had a profound impact on organic synthesis. And this Corey and Chang book from 1989 is that red book that I passed around. It has this disconnection approach to it. And this was first published in Science in 1969. So this was a really innovative way that he looked at doing organic synthesis. So I'd just like to introduce the subject of retrosynthetic analysis. And you'll see when you get your first homework assignment, we're going to start digging into that right away. Now, basically, all the enolate chemistry is acid-base chemistry. So you have a dissociation, you have an acidic proton, you can go through these two, you go to a proton and then the anion, you can go through the kinetics concentrations and these different things end up with the pKa. Basically, the increase in pKa means a decrease in the proton acidity. And a decrease in the pKa means an increase in the proton acidity. We'll go over this in a fair amount of detail. I'm not going to ask you what's the pKa of this proton and expect you to answer it within one pKa unit. I just want you to understand which are more acidic than other compounds. What are the bases that you would need to do to deprotonate these carbon acids? So, you know, when you look at the estimation of the pKa, you can look at the group that's out there. If you have an electron withdrawing group, such as a chlorine, that's only stabilized through induction. You have an electron withdrawing group here that wants to pull the electrons towards it, makes that proton a little more acidic. If you have some of these other functional groups out there, such as your ketone, nitro groups are very good at increasing the acidity of a proton on an alpha carbon. These are not only electron withdrawing, but they have the advantage of resonance stabilization. You can push the proton, push the electrons around, and do a resonance stabilization into these different functional groups. And so that really increases the acidity of the proton on the carbon that's alpha to these functional groups. So, for example, you can have this proton right here on this methyl ketone. The pKa of that is about 20. Now, for comparison, if you have just an alkyl group without this electron withdrawing group, which is also has a resonance stabilization, the pKa of this is about 45. Okay? So this is a much weaker acid than this kind. Now here you have an all-carbon system that's an allylic proton, and you can deprotonate this, push the electrons from here into this bond, and then push it out that way. And that has some resonance stabilization, and so the pKa is in the 30s, mid-30s for that. And so this has electron withdrawing and resonance stabilization. This is pretty much just resonance stabilization, and this doesn't have any electron withdrawing properties. And so this gives you an idea of the pKa that we're working with. And so, again, an increase in acidity in the proton results in a faster deprotonation, which is a kinetic effect, how fast the proton comes off, and as well as a stabilization of the anion form, through, and that's the thermodynamic effect. We'll go into that. Now, estimation of pKa. Again, you can look at the different functional groups to see what they help, how they will increase or decrease the acidity of your proton. Alkyl groups are actually increase or decrease the acidity. They raise the pKa by one or two units. Okay. So, 2-butyl lithium is going to be more basic than N-butyl lithium. Halogens decrease it very small, only 1 or 2 pKa units. Here you have an allylic system, 5 to 7 units. You have a benzene ring, you see a benzylic carbon, down 5 or 7 units. These thiols can more the increase the acidity of the proton. And then these are your electron withdrawing groups that have resonance stabilization. So here you have nitro is the most potent as far as increasing the acidity. Then you've got your ketones, and then you have your sulfones, then you have your esters. Nitriles are about the same as an ester. Sulfoxides, and then benzene ring. And so again, here's the pKa estimation. Here you've got a ketone, pKa 20. Here you've got the acetic acid. And so here you have this proton right here. It's going to be quite acidic because it has this electron withdrawing group and that electron withdrawing group. And it can be resonance stabilized throughout this whole system. Okay, so this really increases the acidity. And again, esters are not quite as good as ketones. Aldehyde down here. This is water. Here you have an amide, about 25. And then different amide protons. You can either abstract the hydrogen off the carbon of an amide, or you can abstract it off the nitrogen. And the nitrogen is going to be more acidic than the carbon taking off there. Nitrogen is more electronegative. And just for reference, these acetoacetate compounds have the same acidity as acetic acid. So this proton is really quite acidic. And you can take these off with just potassium carbonate. We're deprotonating this carbon bond. And this becomes very useful for doing organic synthesis. I believe this is taken. I took this out of the carrying sunburn. So again, here you've got your carbon acids, 45, 42, and then it goes down. You have alkynes, this proton right here, is actually fairly acidic, and you commonly take this off with Grignard bases. And here's T-butoxide. So if you have potassium T-butoxide, this will remove everything below this in different protic solvents. Now, I'm going to the next slide. What about protonation? The pKa in ethanol is going to be different than pKa in DMSO, for example. And then here we've got some very acidic compounds. You get your malonate right here, quite acidic. And then we've got some other groups out here. Here's your acetic acid reference, pH of 5, below this proton. Oh, sorry, this is the one from here, 7. And again, you want a really acidic compound, you put two nitro groups on this alpha carbon, and the pKa is 3.6. This is the pKa in different alcohols, and this is the pKa in DMSO. And the difference is, well, first off, you can have water, and then you can have alcohols, which is going to be more similar to water as far as the acidity goes. If you have these polar non-protic solvents, the pKa is going to be a little bit different. But you can see that in general, they trend with each other. So these are the different carbon acid compounds that you can have with their pKa. Most acidic is at the top, and the least acidic is down at the bottom. And you can see, before we're talking about pKa of these aliphatic carbons around 45. If you go to different solvents, DMSO will be 56. So there's slight differences in the system. Here you've got your bases. At the top end, the least basic is acetate. Down here you got soda. If you want to use potassium or sodium, carbonate, that's down here in this N ballpark. Here you have different amines. You have triethylamine right here. Another popular base is Koenig's base, which is dipropylethylamine. That's going to be a little more basic. Ethyl alkoxides. T-butoxide is more basic than methoxide. And down here you've got your amide bases. Early on, when they started doing organic chemistry, a lot of it was on these very acidic compounds, these malonates, acetoacetic acid. They used quite common bases such as sodium carbonate, alkyl amines, to do their deprotonations and then they figured out how to make their chemistry work. And then also you have the sodium emitted bases, which are down here at about 35. You can get sodium emitted, potassium emitted, lithium emitted. These were not always soluble in the organic solvents that you wanted to do your chemistry in. And so somebody had the brilliant idea to go to basically aliphatic amid anions. And so you can have LDA down, or LDA, which is dipropyl amide, which is diethyl amide anion. But it's about 36 for this deprotonation of this. Here's the benzyl anion, BMSO. It's quite good. And then you have these other bases. This is a hexamethyl bisilazate base right here. And we'll get into a little bit more about the solubility of these bases right now. And so, again, you know, early on they used the sodium, lithium, potassium amide. They're very strong but insoluble in hexane or THF, these types of things. Especially when you cool it down. A lot of times you cool this temperature down to minus 78 degrees, and the anions start to precipitate out, the bases are insoluble. And so a big breakthrough is when they took these soluble secondary derived bases and deprotonate this proton right here. pKa is 35, and butyl lithium, again, this is an alkyl anion. This is a pKa of 45, so this is a stronger base than that. You deprotonate, and you get this LDA, lithium dipropyl amide. You can buy these now, and the quality is very good. This is gives you a volatile product. You can extract it out of the reaction. It's hindered. It's generally non-nucleophilic if you're worried about a side reaction such as a Michael addition or adding to a ester. This really doesn't happen. And so this is LDA, and there's a wide variety of these amide bases. So we've got LICA, again this is even more hindered than the dipropyl amide. If anybody ever watched cartoons in the 70s, you've got the Fat Albert base. I don't know how they came up with all these names. Somebody's favorite cartoon I get. So this is a tetramethyl piperidine base. You can deprotonate that proton. I'm quite fond of these bases. Lithium hexamethyl disilazate is two different abbreviations, sodium and potassium. These are even less nucleophilic than the LDA. And depending on the cation you have, you can do different chemistries. Lithium tends to aggregate more. And then they have different affinity for oxygen versus carbon. So you can tune your base with the strength of the base and the counter ion to get the desired reaction to go. Here's E.J. Corey again. He's done virtually everything in organic chemistry. You make these more hindered, you increase the basicity. Here you've got this terbutyl compound, and you can do a adamantyl. Dave Cullum came up with this one. Now, how many people have had physical organic chemistry? So we'll touch a little bit on that, this radioselectivity and stereoselectivity and deprotonations. So you have a kinetic enolate and a thermodynamic enolate. So here you've got your ketone. You can deprotonate this with a strong base and then do a quick quench. So you deprotonate that at low temperature and you quench with TMS chloride. Trimethylsilyl chloride, this TMS abbreviation. So you, under these low temperature, fast reaction conditions, you pull off this proton relative to this one. Why do you pull this one off preferential to them? Well, there's three protons on this carbon, there's two on this. So you're, they have that going for you. There's sheer numbers, plus also the sterics of the system is set up so that this is more accessible. It's generally not hindered as much because the base doesn't have to interfere with this aliphatic chain out here. So you have those two things going in your favor. So this is the kinetic deprotonation site to generate this enolate. So under a kinetic condition, you generate this enolate preferentially, 84%, and then you have the two thermodynamic enolates formed in near equal amounts. And you can have, if you look, there's a difference in the stereochemistry between the direction of this enolate oxygen relative to this carbon chain. And we'll talk about that a little later. But these are anti to each other, and these are syn to each other. So we'll talk about syn versus anti-enolates. How do you go ahead and form them, and then what's the reactivity differences that you have with them? Now, so this is under kinetic conditions. If you do it under thermodynamic conditions, instead of doing it at low temperature, say you heat it in DMF, this is the heating symbol with trichloramine, use TMS chloride to quench, you get mostly these thermodynamic enolates being formed, and you get a small amount of this kinetic enolate being formed as well. Now there's some other things that you can do to favor your kinetic versus your thermodynamic enolate. If you use a slight excess of base, that will favor the kinetic enolate, which would be deprotonation of this proton here. It's less sterically encumbered than this proton. And so this is your kinetic enolate. So this is going to be your major product, 87%. And then under thermodynamic conditions, you put in a little bit less base. And so that gives it more time to equilibrate. And in this case, they added HMPA, which helps solvate the cation. And so you increase the thermodynamic product. It's about a 50-50 mixture under these conditions. Now, you're always, under these conditions, you're always going to have some ketone present, so you're going to have some protonation, deprotonation going on, and these conditions favor your thermodynamic enolate. And this is basically a review of physical organic chemistry. You've got your starting material here. You've got your kinetic enolate product. It's easier to deprotonate the kinetic hydrogen. And so it's got lower energy. And so that rapidly goes to the product, which compared to the thermodynamic, it might be a little more difficult to remove that proton. Higher energy is required, but overall, the product is of lower energy. And so this is the thermodynamic product, this would be the kinetic product. And so if you have an irreversible reaction, if you do it real quick and trap it with something, you can get the kinetic product. If it's reversible, you're more likely to get the thermodynamic product. So this would be the thermodynamic product, this would be the kinetic. This proton is, again, you have two protons here, it's more accessible. Here you have one proton, and it's sterically hindered, so deprotonation here is going to give you the thermodynamic leave until I give you a homework assignment. And basically, this is just stuff that we're going over in class. It's related to the problems in the back of the book. And so the intention is to, it's a way I can get feedback on my being effective in teaching. So I can collect them and grade them. But I can see where you have more help. And again, this isn't a large portion of the grade, it's 15%. But you have time to look over it. And that question during class, if you have questions after class, you can email me if you have questions. So my goal is to make sure that you understand the material, not to try to stump you. And so we can see that some of them are quite simple. Some of them are more difficult for the back, a different way of doing. And then what we do on September 3rd, so that's 2 weeks from this coming Thursday. Should be plenty of time to go over it. We'll go over the answers in class. So make sure that everybody knows the answers. And if you don't understand it, ask me a question, and my goal is to make sure you understand it. All right, so did everybody get a copy? Do we need a copy? All right, well, thank you very much, and I'll try and get the second lecture onto the blackboard, as well as the first one and all the other materials, so that I can cut down on if I do that, I won't be bringing photocopies. But so if you want to take notes.